Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Welcome to an HBO podcast from the HBO Late Night series, Real Time with Bill Maher. Start the clock.
Thank you, real timers. Thank you, I appreciate it. Oh, stop. Thank you very much. I appreciate that very much. Wow, what a great mood you're in. I know, it's exciting. It's a holiday time of year. We had 420 last week. And now it's Passover, which no one's celebrating. Could be a rough night. No, you know Passover. It celebrates the exodus of the Jews in biblical times from Egypt. And nowadays it celebrates the exodus of the Jews from Columbia University. Yeah, when did Columbia become Kanye State? Have you seen what's going on across the country? The kids have really found their cause. Which is getting all the Jews out of the river to the sea. That seems to be... Well, that is their cause. I'm not even making a joke yet. That's what they're saying. But campuses across the country are in chaos. Kids have put up all these tent encampments on the quads, and they won't come out of their tents. The authorities don't know what to do. They don't know how to get them out of their tents. I know how. Where do their phones die? They'll come out. But, kids, little tip, keep those tents. You're going to need them when you graduate. And people, have you seen this? People are all saying this is very much like the 60s. Anybody remember the 60s? It's not like the 60s. The hippies fucked in the tents. These kids are like, fucking, ew. So... So heteronormative. But now, Columbia even banned a Jewish professor who was apparently just saying there should be a two-state solution, which is not good enough for these people, these radicals. And the Palestinian students on campus said, with the Jewish professor there at the school, they felt unsafe. Unsafe. I completely relate to this. Last time I was in New York, I was mugged by a gang of professors. And I told the police, they said, there's nothing we can do. They have tenure. Really? So, also going on in New York City, I've been following the Trump trial. Oh, my. This was a shocker this week. Turns out the National Enquirer... Do you read the National Enquirer? Oh, you do. Oh, fuck. Well, turns out it's a burst your bubble. They are somewhat less than a reputable news source. Wow, it's like finding the magic eight ball doesn't predict the future. It's really... It's starting to make me question everything I see at the checkout counter. You mean the three guys on the candy bar are not actually musketeers? Is this what I'm led to believe? So, Trump has a lot going on. Just in the last 24 hours, he was indicted as a co-conspirator in the fake election scheme in Michigan, and then as an unindicted co-conspirator, number one, in the fake election scheme in Arizona. The Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments on his ridiculous claim that he has total immunity as president. And then, of course, there's the trial going on in New York. Who knew that breaking so many laws is what you needed to make America great again? You know, I missed that. There's NBC has a new show coming out in the fall. It's called Law and Order, Him Again. Okay, but... All right, so I just want to apprise you on this story. It's not the biggest story of the week. It's just, it's my cause. So maybe it's not that fucking funny. I don't care. This is what I'm pissed off about. The governor of North Dakota, why there is even two Dakotas, don't get me started on that. Or one. But Kristi Noem, okay, so she has a new book out. She's highly considered to be the vice presidential candidate with Trump. Okay, she's bragging that she shot and killed her 14-month-old dog because the dog was, according to her, untrainable and a worthless as a hunter. Your move, Marjorie Taylor Greene. I just want to... I just want to say this to the people who say the parties are exactly the same. Well, you know what? Joe Biden had a bitey dog, but he didn't take him in the Rose Garden and blow his fucking brains out, okay? And... in further animal news, bird flu is now in the milk. How it got in the milk is none of my business. But... if a crow fucked a cow, that bird has some serious game. Okay. We've got a great show. Don Lemon, Scott Galloway are here. But first up, he has an environmental lawyer and the independent candidate in the 2024 presidential election, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Did you stack this audience?
I didn't. I wish this, the election, we could hold it here.
Well, I'm telling you. So let me ask the question first that your uncle had to answer in 1980, and he kind of blew it, when Mike Wallace asked him, why do you want to be president? Why are you running?
My attitude, I was not waiting around, and you've known me for a long time.
Yes.
I'm going to run for president at some point in my... attitude evolved as I watched our country depart from the place that I thought it was supposed to be, and my political party, too. But I would say today, people who look at President Trump and President Biden see two very, very different people. Their dispositions are different. Their ideologies are different. Their approach to life, to other people, to politics is all completely different. But the actual issues that they're talking about, they differ with each other, is actually a really narrow Overton window. It's, you know, it's mainly culture war issues, it's abortion, it's guns, it's the border, it's transgender, and
it's not democracy also? I mean, I've heard let me quote you. You say, I can make the argument that President Biden is the much worse threat to democracy. You've also said the greatest threat to democracy is not somebody who questions election returns. But Trump did much more than just question election returns, did he not? Is he not responsible for actually scheming to overturn that election? And isn't that a fundamental difference?
Yeah, but are you going to try to put me in a position to defend Donald Trump?
No, I'm just trying to say, I'm saying, there, no, what I'm trying to do is trying to help you run for president. That's what I'm trying to do, actually.
I was on a liberal news site with CNN when I made that statement. I didn't say that President Biden is a great threat. I think it's important that people understand that. And I said I could make the argument that he is. Is it, you know, to me, And I think the framers of our Constitution believe this, too, that the worst thing that you can do in a democracy is to censor speech. And that's why they put Hamilton, Adams, and Madison said, we put freedom of expression, the guarantee of freedom of expression, in the First Amendment, because all the other amendments, all the other rights depended on it. If you have a government that can silence its critics, it has license for any atrocity. And all the rights that are embodied in the, or guaranteed by the Bill of Rights are up for grabs if a government can censor us. You know, I have a suit now that I've won against President Biden in the Court of Appeals, U.S. Court of Federal Court of Appeals, for censoring me systematically many, many hundreds of times, beginning 37 hours after he took the oath of office. Now, a lot of people will say, well, he was just censoring you on COVID criticism, and he's a nice guy, so even if he uses censorship, it's not a threat to the Republic. And that is probably true. I don't think President Biden is going to dismantle the Republic. But once you cede a right, a power like that to a government, it will never give it back. And it will always ultimately abuse it to the maximum extent possible. So, you know, today they're letting pharmaceutical companies censor doctors and scientists who differ with the official orthodoxies on COVID. But I've been around long enough to know that once the big tech firms know that they can get away with that, the oil companies will be back next in line to censor their critics. The coal companies, the chemical companies, the processed food industry, everybody else is going to get in line. Once we say that's okay, we've let a genie out of the bottle. And that happened during the Biden administration like no other in history. Literally, the White House was emailing the social media sites, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, telling them to remove people like me. And by the way, there was no misinformation. No, the government was unable to point to a single post that I ever made that was factually incorrect.
And I'm very sympathetic to you on this. Yeah. I mean, I've been making very similar cases here. Not as far as you go. This is where we do part company at some point. I think, as you have made the case better than anybody, we are being poisoned in this country. I think you always had the issue of our time. You were an environmental lawyer for most of your life. And I do think when it comes to medical issues, the people, the science, there is no the in science. We need a debate. And they did. Thank you, one person. And very often, you know, the people who were talking about the science were wearing masks outside and they're 22. Okay, you know, so they don't have all the science either. But then you do say things like no vaccine is safe and effective. And I don't agree with that. All vaccines have side effects, medical intervention does. We should recognize that and not squelch it because it would make people afraid to take it. That's different than you said that. No vaccine is safe and effective. Yes, please.
I made that statement on Lex Fridman's podcast.
Yes.
And it was an answer to a question that Lex had asked me about, are there any vaccines? And if you go back and look at this, because that statement has been misused, I would never say that. What I said was, he asked me, are there any vaccines that are safe and effective? And I said, it appears like some of the live virus vaccines appear to be both safe and effective. And then I said, there's no vaccines that are safe and effective. And I was going to continue that sentence. If you ask for the product to be measured against other medical products with placebo-controlled double-blind studies, Lex interrupted me before I said
okay. There's the explanation.
So, yeah.
All right. So, but your vice presidential pick wants to recall the Moderna vaccine. That's the one I got.
She's not going to.
Well, do you agree with that? Recall it.
I think I think those vaccines we need to have again true double-blind placebo-controlled trials on that. There's 25% of Americans who believe that they know somebody who was killed by a COVID vaccine.
Killed?
Killed. 25% of Americans, 52% of Americans believe that the vaccines are causing injuries, including death, 52%. Oh, well, if you look at the clinical trial studies, the actual studies that were done that were released of the Pfizer vaccine, Moderna has not released it. If you look at the Pfizer vaccine, there were 22,000 people in the placebo group, 22,000 people who got the actual vaccine. And the people who got the vaccine had a 23% higher death rate from all causes at the end of that study.
But that could not be the disease itself?
No, well...
Because we know that...
If it is, then the vaccine doesn't work, does it?
Well, it's early... Well, no. That's not true at all. And I'm somebody who did not want the vaccine and didn't think I should have been made to get it. But it does work.
Wait a minute.
Work in the sense that if you were many people who would have died because they were not in good health, it killed mostly the obese and the very elderly. Okay?
Well,
those people
mean,
should.
Are we talking about
they, those people are alive today, I think, because of the vaccine. I think that's the truth. Does it also have complications? Yes. I mean, anecdotally, I've not heard about one out of four people dying, but I know a lot of people who've had issues. Yes.
Dying.
But they could have had worse issues if they got the disease. That's the thing. Medicine is always... So I just am for... Let's make it a case-by-case basis. Certainly.
Yeah, well, I agree with that, too. I believe that people
you
want
do.
A vaccine,
yeah.
that they should be able to get it. I'm not anti-vaccine. What I say is that...
Well, people think you are.
Well, I know, but that's because I'm called that because it's a way of silencing me. But I have said for 17 years, I'm not anti-vaccine. I just want good science. I want people should be able to make informed choices. I am against vaccine mandates.
Why can't... Why, I am, too. Why is your own family... I mean, for those of us... And you know me a long time, and I've told you, Irish-American... My father, biggest Kennedy, my mother. We were huge Kennedy fans, still are in the family. I mean, they're gone now, but my sister. So when we see the Kennedys fighting amongst each other, when I saw your family coming out against you so much last week, it breaks my heart. I mean, why can't you get them on your side more?
I control them.
Well,
there's 105... members of my family, and it's a big Irish family, and you know, I have family members in this audience.
I can hear.
Not all of them. I have family members running my campaign. I have family members running certain states of my campaign. So, you know, there's a division in my family, but... I also, there's five members of my family that work for the Biden administration. President Biden's been a long-term friend of our families. There's a bust of my father behind him in the Oval Office. And he's been a friend of mine. So I understand the dismay that some members of my family have at me running. But also, you know, I come from a family where we were taught to argue with each other and to debate each other. My father orchestrated debates almost every night at the dinner table. He encouraged us to debate with passion, with good information, with reason, but also to love each other, even when we disagreed with each other. And I love my family. I feel loved by them. They're entitled to their opinion. They disagree with me. They disagree with me on the censorship issue. They disagree with me on the Ukraine. They disagree with me on a lot of other issues. And I respect them, and I love them. And I wish we could do the same thing in this country. Right. Where we could differ with each other.
All right, my final question. When you first came out, you were polling at 19%. That's dropped. Last one I saw was 11, and then one below that. I mean, what is the path? I mean, other than that, you're just a spoiler. Now, you begged Ralph Nader, as I did once with Michael Moore, not to run for president when he was running against George Bush, when it was that election. What's different about this? I mean, if there is a path to victory, let me know what it is.
So right now, I'm beating both President Trump and President Biden among young people, all Americans under 35.
But they don't vote.
Well, they may this time. I mean, they're telling us they're going to vote.
Okay.
I'm beating them in the battleground states under Americans under 45. I'm beating President Trump and President Biden among independents, which is the largest political party now. This is the first presidential election in history where independents will be the biggest, self-identified independents are the biggest demographic. It's 43% of the American
electorate. You're only on the ballot in three states.
Me?
Yeah, aren't you?
Yeah, but that's a different question.
Well, that's a path. You got to be on the ballot too.
I'm going to be on the ballot. I'm going to be on the ballot.
You're going to be on the ballot.
I
all
can
this
guarantee
state?
You, I will be on the ballot in every state.
Really?
Very, very quickly.
Oh, there's news.
Oh yeah, I'll be on the ballot. But
okay.
And also, every poll that's been done has shown that my popularity, my favorability rating, is way ahead of both President Trump and President Biden. In fact, higher than any other political figure in this country. Every poll that's been done shows that in a head-to-head race, in other words, if it's me against President Trump, I beat President Trump. If it's Biden against President Trump, he loses.
Well, we don't know any of that.
They're all very close,
and I've seen polls where your favorability rating is below both of them.
What I'm saying is every poll that's been done that puts us in head-to-head races has me beating both President Trump and President Biden. 80% of the public does not want to see a contest between President Trump and President Biden.
So that's
true. Alternative. The issue is, why are they voting for them? They're voting for them. And here's my experience, and you tell me if yours is different. Because a lot of times people, liberals who I know or friends, say to me, you need to get out of the race to let Biden run because otherwise President Trump is going to win. They never say to me, let Biden run because he has the cognitive capacity and the vigor and the energy and the vision for a future that's going to really change things, to change these existential issues that we're facing, the destruction of the American middle class, inflation, the budget deficit, $34 trillion. We're now paying more for the service on that debt than for our military. And, you know, the chronic disease epidemic that's disabling our kids. Nobody is saying that either of these candidates are going to be able to solve those things.
Listen, I got to go to the panel, but I have to say, these issues should be raised. I hope you're in the debates. I hope this debate is here. Robert Kennedy.
Good to see you, Bobby.
Thank you. All right, let's meet our panel. Hey, guys. All right. He is a professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and the author of the new book, The Algebra of Wealth, The Simple Formula for Financial Security, Scott Galloway. And a first-timer for us, he is an award-winning journalist, founder of the Lemon Media Network, and host of the Don Lemon Show, streaming on YouTube and Spotify. Don Lemon's with us. Okay, gentlemen. So, you're a professor, right?
That's supposedly, yeah.
What's going on your campus? Anything interesting? Because I got to tell you, when I'm listening to these people on TV talking about how it's the 60s all over again with the campus radicals and all the demonstrations, let me just throw that out as a first question. Is this like the 60s when they were demonstrating against the war in Vietnam? What's alike and what's different? Compare and contrast.
I wasn't there in the 60s.
I wasn't either, but I can read.
But yes, I agree. I do. I live near NYU, and I got to watch a lot of it play out. And I went to talk to the students. Listen, it's the same in that it's a protest, but it's different in that this is about horrible, horrible anti-Semitism and racism. A lot of it, some of it is, I should say. But when you talk to the kids, for the most part, not all of them, these are kids that are out there and they're peaceful. A lot of them don't have the information needed because they're getting their news from TikTok and from social media.
right.
And they don't have the history of what's going on. But, you know, I think that Scott and I agreed. We talked about this. I think kids on college campuses should be given a wide berth to sort of express themselves and to do dumb things. But when it crosses over into violence and anti-Semitism, that's not right.
But the double standard here is pretty striking. Dylann Roof goes into a Charleston church and kills nine members of a black church, If I went down to the plaza of any of these universities with a white hood, a Confederate flag, and signs and started saying, Dylan, globalize Dylan, kill black people.
Right.
There'd be no need for context. We wouldn't be talking about free speech. I'd be out of academia. And if I whipped up students into a frenzy such that we started harassing non-white students on their way to the library, and I started getting in their face or even throwing things at them, and that has happened, we wouldn't be having a conversation about the First Amendment. We'd call in the fucking National Guard. And what is clear to me is that free speech is at its freest when it's hate speech against Jews.
Well, I mean, there's, I can quote some professors, and these are professors. This is where did the kids get it from?
Yeah.
At Columbia, Joseph Massad praised the awesome scenes on October 7th, and he says, this is another Columbia professor, Hamid Dabashi, every dirty, treacherous, ugly, and pernicious act happening in the world could be traced to the ugly name of Israel. That is just a level of rhetoric that you're right, I just have never heard anywhere else. And they say it's great to live in interesting times. A little too interesting, these times. That I would live to see this day where Jewish students at Columbia, it's still in Morningside Heights, right, Columbia?
Yeah.
Are told to stay home?
Yeah. But some of the kids out there, a lot of them are Jewish kids.
Yeah.
A lot of them
are
Jewish
kids.
That's really sad. There's an age gap. I mean, when I talk to them about it, there's an age gap. The young people believe a certain way, a certain thing about what's happening in the war in Gaza and towards Israel. I don't know what the disconnect is. It would be interesting for older people, especially older Jews and younger Jews, to sit down and figure it out. But it's very interesting to me, this age gap that's going on.
Well, Harvard is teaching a course I read in the Times this week in Taylor Swift. I think that's a lot of the problem. There's an actual course. Yeah, did you see that in the paper?
It's a billion-dollar business. Like, I think you got to cut a 19-year-old a pretty wide berth. The point of being 19 is you act stupid and you learn and you move on. I'm glad a camera isn't following me around, or wasn't when I was 19. The faculty, if we made the mistake of hiring you and you want to support Islamic Jihad or the Islamic Republic, then you know what? We made a mistake and we should rectify that mistake. That we pay these people. And if they are not taking the temperature down and they lack the critical thinking that they can't criticize a murderous autocracy, pretty simple, they should be fired.
Yeah, the kids don't seem to know exactly what they're protesting for. This went viral, this woman at Columbia. I think the goal is showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU is doing.
Yeah. Yes.
I hate them, and I'll figure out why later.
It's awful, obviously. Obviously, it's awful what happened on October 7th. But, I mean, some of this has been going on forever. And I think that the young people are just becoming aware of it because of October 7th, and they don't know the history of it. And they're getting it, as I said, off of social media. And perhaps they should be teaching, as you said, classes on this rather than on Taylor Swift.
But in the big statement here, the SJP chapters across the country erupted in a fierce display of power targeted the universities for their endless complicity and profiteering off the genocide in Gaza and colonization of Palestine. Well, who's profiteering? Whenever there's a war, people do make money.
Right.
That's true. Somebody is going to buy bombs and planes and guns. But I don't know if this was a plot.
The species needs two things to survive. One, we need to enjoy sex. And two...
I agree with that.
There's a left turn in the discussion. Huh? You want to... Scott, if you want to stop talking about this, just say so. Jesus. That was a little weird, man.
It gets worse. The second thing is you have to get joy from rallying together to fight off a perceived threat. And I think part of the problem is young people aren't having enough sex, and so they go on the hunt for fake threats. And the most popular threat throughout history, type into Google anti-Semitism and pick your century, and you're going to find it. No. A Jewish girl on her way to get a manicure is not your mortal enemy. Stop it, for God's sake.
But to your point before, it has become, it's become the thing to do. It's a fad. Some of the kids are out there and they don't know what they're protesting about. It's become a fad. And the thing to do is to protest.
Maybe this is cynical, but does this have anything to do with finals coming up? It does seem like... really? But I mean, you know, it does seem like right around this time is when the campuses always erupt in some cause, you know. And I'm not saying it's not sincere, but it is, the timing is suspicious. Well, we'd love to study and take the finals, but we just have to stop everything for, what is it?
The next fad?
Look, I do think... No?
If there's anything in this, and listen, I'm not minimizing what's going on, but it teaches some of these students to deal with discomfort, right?
Yeah, that's good.
Right. I mean, it does, right?
Need to.
But this
you
is
mean the tent, living in the tent?
Well, living in the tent, and also, listen, I'm different than you guys. You know, I'm a black gay man, so I live in uncomfortable spaces all the time, and I think that is a good lesson for college students. Again, I'm not saying...
What's going on?
What do you mean, what's going on?
Well, you said uncomfortable spaces.
Well, it's uncomfortable. Everything... College is not a comfortable place. You learn...
No, but you say you live in these spaces.
Yeah, I live in these spaces.
Well, I mean, just tell me what.
Well, I'm often the only person of color in the room, especially in...
There's only three of us
spaces.
Here.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on.
But we, like, it's easy to poke fun at these kids, but history has a way of repeating itself. Yeah. And this is how it starts. In 30s Germany, a progressive community, a thriving gay community, excellent academic institutions, and how it started was, you know, it was fashionable to wear a brown shirt and mock students at the University of Vienna. This is how it stops. And quite frankly, I'm really disappointed more Jews aren't speaking out. Yeah. And,
well... All right. But let's turn to your subject now, sex.
Okay.
Because with all the depressing things that have been going on in the world, I'd say there was one thing I thought I could rely on, which is the Golden Bachelor.
What a love story, huh?
Weren't you into it? I mean, I so related to him and his age-appropriate relationship. One thing I've always been for, it's that.
You actually believe, Bill, that you don't believe you can go on a show and meet someone for a couple of weeks and fall in love and live together for the rest of your life?
I could. Not that guy. but I was... I was leafing through the trades only like 3 weeks ago, and I saw this ad, and it says, you know, believe in love again, the impossible not to be... It's impossible not to be moved. And then, of course, it was only a couple of weeks later when the whole thing fell apart, and I thought it would be a very good time to do one of our favorite categories here on the show, which is books that didn't age well. It's called You've Done It Before, You Loved It Before, We Want You to Love It Again. For example, there's Travis Kelce's Bros Before Hoes did not age well. Morgan Wallen's Decluttering for Dummies. If you don't love it, toss it. O.J. Simpson's If I'm Lying, I'm Dying. Lauren Boebert's How About a Hand? My Guide to the Perfect Theater Experience. Sam Bankman-Fried's Free at Last, My Journey to Financial Independence did not age well. Tiger Woods, Tips to Keep You from Driving into the Trees. Shohei Ohtani's Not Without My Translator, A Friendship for the Ages did not age well. And... of course, P. Diddy's Untouchable, A Rapper's Guide to Staying One Step Ahead of the Law. And... there is one book I can think of that will age well, and that's this one coming out May 21st. What This Comedian Said Will Shock You. You can pre-order it now. All right. So I want to talk about the Trump trial. I'm very excited.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. Exactly the way to say it.
I get confused. Look, I'm a journalist, and I get confused as to what trial I'm watching because there are so many.
Well,
what case I'm watching.
Yeah. I mean, this one, I got to say, I was always against because I thought of all the ones you're bringing, this is the least serious. That has been my... I did editorials about it and blah, blah, blah. I don't want... Now I think Trump could lose.
Yeah.
I'm turning on this one.
Yeah.
Because it's not what I thought it was going to be. And this David Pecker, I mean, brought down by a pecker, this guy.
I had a show called Pecker Problems that Donald Trump has pecker problems. And he does have a pecker problem. But I think this one could take him down. Have you watched him in the courtroom with
yes.
the bad lighting? He looks small. He looks diminished. He looks like the sort of the Wizard of Oz that you know.
Right. Yes.
He looks like a suicide bomber that's having second thoughts. This is oddly related to the issue around the importance of free speech, but we've really perverted this great intention of airing information when we have media companies paying people saying, you're going to get your story told, but we want an exclusive. And then they use that under the auspices of airing it in an exclusive. They kill it. So
yes.
a media outlet suppressing speech, it's a new level of mendaciousness
yes.
in America.
I mean, that's the big takeaway from this trial, that the Inquirer, which I must say I have been reading weekly, every week, since 1988. I don't care. I know it's bullshit. It amuses me. And people, how dare you? It's terrible. You're in... I don't give a shit. It's funny. It's even funny when I'm in it. I was in it last week, and the title of the story was Nobody Likes Bill.
Yeah.
I was like, you guys could not have made me happier.
Do they call you for a response? They'll call my PR
Oh, sometimes,
person.
Yeah.
No. What are you going to
do? But
a media company is an arm of a political candidate?
Right.
That are you
they
shocked?
Were, and but this David Pecker, he's like not covering up anything.
No.
And what he is saying now is that the crux of it, he's saying this was not to protect his family.
No.
Donald Trump did this to win the election. This is the key thing, and it's so clear. I think even a jury of Americans could get this. Really?
Yes. It is clear. And at the end of the day, he still says that Donald Trump is a mentor and a friend. He still looks at him as a mentor and a friend. Now, for you to testify against a mentor and a friend, it's got to be true.
Right.
It's got to be true.
And by the way, if this goes that way and Trump loses, it's going to change the whole election.
Yeah.
A number of independents, a significant number, and Republicans say their vote will change if he is a convicted criminal, and he'll look like a loser. Not that he doesn't already, but, you know. And Alvin Bragg is going to be the rising star of the Democratic Party because everyone said, oh, not a good idea, including me. So
100%.
We'll see.
But then what happens, if the Supreme Court says he's immune?
But if you look at the four jurisdictions he's being charged in, when it gets this far, there's between a 70 and 92% prosecution rate.
Wow.
So if you do the statistics, there's like a 1 in 600 chance one of these things doesn't stick.
Right.
So even if there's a no was Trumper,
but
the reality
this might be
is,
the only one that comes to trial before the election.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But interesting point you raise, immunity. Is the Supreme Court really toying with the idea?
They are.
That a president can, I mean, it was the hypotheticals that were introduced to the court where they went, maybe, this week, where a president could assassinate a political rival, not one overseas. We're not talking about assassinating Putin. We're talking about assassinating your Democratic rival or your Republican rival. Could sell secrets.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things would be acceptable because a president has this absolute immunity. What happened to no one is above the law?
All you have to do is say, if you're doing it in your official capacity as president, and if you're doing it in your official capacity as president, then you're immune to it. But what's interesting is that they're actually arguing that Joe Biden could have Donald Trump assassinated
right.
and he would be immune. I don't think they realize that's what they're saying.
I don't think he should do that, but I would like to put him in a dungeon. If you have the immunity. But What say you, Professor? Where are they? What is the legal reasoning for this, that the court is so confused about this?
Well, the most damaging legacy of Donald Trump was that he had three Supreme Court justice nominees sit in front of senators and lie and say that Roe v. Wade was established precedence. And in the moment they got on the court, they had a change of heart. This is serious. You need to be thoughtful about, you know, the president we elect has an impact on our daughters, who we declare war against. If this is a democracy or digresses into fascism, not even when they're in town, not even when after they leave the office. His most damaging legacy is packing the Supreme Court with what feels like a massive veer to the right. I got to think that they have some fidelity to the law. You'd like to think that a lifetime appointment will kick in and that they will show some fidelity to the Constitution and constantly see that statue in front of the court that has Lady Justice with a blindfold over her eyes. Otherwise, the Supreme Court will continue its immense decline as the institution that used to be the most respected institution in America that's fallen further faster than any other institution.
Mm-hmm. All right. So before we run out of time, let me go back to what you were starting to talk about before, which is people not having enough sex, the younger people.
Yeah.
First of all, how do you know this? But really, there are statistics on this? Because I do read them, but I don't know how they get them. Excuse me.
Pew reported that 1 in 3 men under the age of 30 hasn't had sex in the last year. Mm-hmm. 30 to 34-year-olds, 60% of them used to have at least one child. Now it's 27%. They're staring at their phones. They've been convinced by the most deeply deep-pocketed, intelligent people in the world that they can have a reasonable facsimile of life on a screen with an algorithm. And here's a message to all young people. Nothing wonderful is going to happen to you on a screen. Mm-hmm. And here's the bottom line. Going out, trying to meet a woman or a man, putting up with the rejection, the humiliation, the endurance, showering for God's sakes, having a plan. This shit is hard. This shit is hard. But again, another, you know, call out to young people. Romantic comedies are 2 hours, not 15 minutes for a reason. This shit is hard, and you know what? It's worth it.
Yeah.
Get out, meet people.
People don't know how to meet people anymore. People don't go to bars to meet people anymore. You meet people on your phone, you know.
I mean, I don't go to bars much myself anymore, but when I, excuse me, when I do, I've seen people, and they're on their phone in the bar.
In the bar. But also, yeah. Also people meet, where do you spend the most of your time? It's at work. People used to meet at work.
Right.
Now you 100%. Cannot, I would not hit on or ask anybody out 100%. At work these days. I wouldn't do it.
1 in 3 relationships begin at work. Young people, trust me on this, get out, drink more, make a series of bad decisions that might pay off. Get out.
I know we're being funny about this, but it has serious repercussions for society, does it not, in the economy? I mean, your book talks about it, about, like, decisions people make and how that affects them the rest of their life financially. I mean, just the pool, it seems to me, of, you know, economically viable young men, I think you call them, is shrinking.
Look, if we want to have an honest conversation about mating, we have to have an honest conversation. Men mate socioeconomically horizontally and down, women horizontally and up. And when the pool of economically and emotionally viable men that's horizontal and up keeps shrinking. And by the way, women are doing great, and we should do nothing to get in the way of that. But if we don't find a way to level up young people and put more money into their pocket, which slowly but surely has been transferred to your old people through almost every economic program, they're not going to want to form families. And if you look at Italy or you look at Japan, the way we go out of business is when we don't have enough young people to support our expensive and unproductive seniors. And you have an economy that goes into decline. So the ultimate expression of optimism is having kids. And we have a cohort of young people who aren't having sex. They aren't getting together. They're more obese. They're more anxious. They're more depressed. 55% of people our age are extremely proud to be American. 18% of people under the age of 25 are extremely proud to be American. What happens when you don't have the guardrails of a relationship? And this is what happens to young men when they don't have the prospect of a romantic relationship. They're more prone to misogynistic content. They don't believe in climate change. They're more prone to conspiracy theories.
Gambling.
Yeah.
I was reading
they
that.
They become shitty citizens. We are producing too many shitty citizens. What are the most unstable, violent...
Scott,
isn't that partially our fault, or, well, your fault? I don't have kids. You don't have kids. But we set...
Yeah, his fault.
This is a society that we set up for these kids. They can't afford... Many young people can't afford to even own a home anymore.
Right
on,
brother.
They barely afford rent. They live in a gig economy where they have to work two or three jobs. You used to, you know, go to a company and you stay there 30 years and you retire. It's no longer the system anymore. They can't afford to be to have the American dream.
Love what you're saying, Don Lemon. Every morning, me and my colleagues at academia wake up and ask ourselves one question. How do I increase my compensation while reducing my accountability?
Right.
And we found the ultimate strategy. It's called the LVMH strategy, and all of America is doing it. Once I have a degree, take UCLA from 76% admissions rate, which it was when I was there, down to 9%. Once I have a house, I become very concerned with traffic. So if you have a college degree and you have a house, you've seen your asset prices skyrocket. But if you're an entrant trying to have your shot at the American dream, sorry, boss, you're not the future. You're nutrition for my generation. Everything we do here is a purposeful transfer of wealth and opportunity from young people to old people. And they are enraged, and they should be.
Yeah. All right, I better stop you there. Thank you, guys. That was fun. Time for new rules, everybody. New rules. Okay, new rule now that Tucker Carlson is claiming that UFOs are actually spiritual entities that coexist with humans and have been living under the ocean for thousands of years, someone has to ask him, did a dispensary recently open in your neighborhood? Because this has all the earmarks of adult-onset stonerism. That's when an adult who has never smoked in their life walks into a dispensary out of sheer curiosity, and a few weeks later, they're living on the beach and talking about spiritual entities. New rule, the sword-carrying woman on the new 50-cent piece has to tell me, don't I know you from somewhere? Never mind, I don't. New rule, don't be surprised. Red Lobster may file for bankruptcy. Everyone I know who has ever eaten there got crab. I don't want to say Red Lobster is bad, but if I lived in New Guinea and the only restaurant on the island was Red Lobster, even I would eat Joe Biden's uncle. New rule, you don't have to feel sorry for the woman in the iconic photograph from the 1930s Dust Bowl. At least she lived a life of quiet dignity. If Dorothea Lange took her photo today, it would just wind up in some stupid meme like that feeling when the Trader Joe's lot is full. And then she'd just be forgotten until BuzzFeed put her in a Where Are They Now list between the Success Kid and Scumbag Steve. New rule, Brian Johnson, the tech tycoon who spends $2 million a year on supplements and gadgets to reverse the aging process, has to admit that he's not getting any younger, but he is slowly turning into a lesbian. And that's okay. I just hope he likes golf. And finally, new rule. Someone needs to tell the people who block traffic in the name of a cause, no one likes you. And you're probably hurting your cause. In case you haven't seen what's going on lately, activists for ending the war in Gaza have taken to gathering on roads and bridges and stopping commuters from crossing. It happened last week in New York and San Francisco, Chicago, Seattle. They also blocked traffic here on the 405, but no one noticed. What they did notice was this, that you have to be pretty dumb to think that the way to bring people around to your point of view is to make them late to pick up their kids from daycare. And that's what most normies are thinking. I have a kid. I have a job. And yes, I'm sure there are injustices on both sides in the Middle East, as there are injustices all over the world. But I'm going to be late for work, something you protesters on the bridge seem to have the luxury of not having to worry about, which seems kind of privilege-y. You can glue your hands to the street because your hands don't have to do any work today. I'm not saying there aren't sincere passions about Gaza, especially among people from the region, but social justice warriors, for a lot of them, it seems like it's more about the warrioring than about whatever the cause is. If you really cared about apartheid so much, which Israel does not actually practice, Arabs there vote, they serve in parliament, they sit on the judiciary, wouldn't you start with this? With the hundreds of millions of women in the world who live under a true apartheid, a gender apartheid of the most brutal kind? I'll wait. Are you really speaking truth to power, or do you just think you look cool in a kafeya? Which is really just the new Che Guevara t-shirt. Another historical figure you never researched and so think is a hero, but was actually a sadistic, racist monster fighting for communism, the worst form of government ever. But these are small matters. Small matters when activism merges with narcissism. Less about the cause and more about me. Look at me. Watch me. And if you like the way I'm fighting injustice, remember to like and subscribe. In February, a sad, confused man even lit himself on fire in front of the Israeli embassy, and in his last Facebook post, he said, "Many of us like to ask ourselves, what would I do if I was alive during slavery?" Interesting cocktail question, sir, and I guess the right answer is kill myself. But it wouldn't have actually fixed the problem if General Ulysses S. Grant had immolated himself and his last words were, "Hey, Lincoln, are you using that log?" And then last week, another sad, confused man set himself on fire at the Trump trial in New York. So you can tell yourself you're a martyr for the Palestinian cause, but it's a lot less special when the next guy does it for Stormy Daniels. I don't want to diminish how sad it is that someone would take their own life for any reason, but maybe from now on, before anyone commits an act of civil disobedience, they should ask themselves a few questions, like, is the most important thing in my life something I hadn't heard of 6 months ago? Do I even know? Do I even know what the fuck I'm talking about? Am I really here for the cause, or is the cause here to bring you me? Hey, if it makes you feel good to cosplay as revolutionaries, knock yourself out. Burn yourself out. Just don't drag Gaza into it. Also, throwing stuff on paintings is just stupid. No one sees mashed potatoes on a Monet and thinks, he's got a point, I should recycle my cans. Last week, Google employees staged the sit-in to protest their company doing business with Israel. Their T-shirts said, "Googlers against genocide," but they could have just as well said, "Look at me, see me." And Google did see them to the door. They fired all 28 of them the next day. Yes, Cahoney Award coming to you guys next year. But maybe the question that today's protester needs to ask themselves more than any other is, why do I care so much about this particular cause? North Korea starves its people. China puts them in concentration camps. Myanmar brutalizes the Rohingya. Boko Haram kidnaps whole villages of women. The president of Burundi says gays should be stoned to death because they, quote, deserve it. Nothing? Ukraine? Maybe if these Google employees had the slightest idea what kind of fundamentalist, oppressive assholes they're supporting, Hamas, the Houthis, Hezbollah, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, they might take it a little easier on the world's greatest monster, Genocide Joe. Genocide, by the way, is when you want to wipe out an entire people. That's the stated goal of Hamas. That's what From the River to the Sea means. Hamas would do that to Israel, but can't. Israel could do that to them, but doesn't. And you know how... And you know how you could find that out? Google it. And not to rub it in, but you know who all this posturing for a cause reminds me of? This fat guy from Florida who's always pretending that he's all about the cause of making America great again when plainly he's simply history's greatest attention whore. He's always finding some new injustice, from Obama's birth certificate to rigged elections, learning nothing about it and making it personal. So chew on that, my warrior friends. The person you most resemble is the guy who looks like he's always jerking off two guys at once. There it is. I got it in. Yeah. All right, that's our show. I'll be at Financial Field in Phoenix May 4th. CIBC Chicago Theater, December 6th and 7th. I want to thank Scott Galloway, Don Lemon, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Now go watch Overtime on YouTube. Thank you, guys.
Catch all new episodes of Real Time with Bill Maher every Friday night at 10, or watch him anytime on HBO On Demand. For more information, log on to HBO.com.